නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස සෝ වත චුන්ද අත්තනා දන්තෝ විනීතෝ පරිනිබ්බුතෝ පරන්දමෙස්සති විනෙස්සති පරිනිබ්බාපෙස්සති ඉති ඨානමේතං විජ්ජති ඉති. Dear friends in Dhamma, so we were discussing Salleka Sutta, which is the 8th Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. So if I just go through a briefing of what we have already covered, so basically we recognize what is the reason for this Sutta, that is Venerable Mahachunda approaching the Buddha while he was in Shravasti, and he not alone, he is coming with his students. And he is asking a kind of a question. Yama bhante aneka vihita dittiyo loke uppajjanti. Bhante, there are different kinds of wrong views arising in this world. Attavada patisangyuttava, lokavada patisangyuttava. So, based on the self and based on the world in general. Adimevanuko bhante bhikkhuno manasi karoto evametasam dittinam pahanam hoti. Evametasam dittinam patinissaggo hoti. Bhante, are these wrong views could be abandoned at the early stages of one's practice? Is it easy to abandon? Can one be able to quickly relinquish all these different views? So the Buddha's answer, and he confirms that yes, there are different wrong views centered upon a self and again a world, and they are going through some sort of three stages. Dittyo uppajjanti, they are arising in one's mind. Yacha anusenti, they remain at the mind. Yathacha samudacharanti, so they become the governing factor of the whole mind, accordingly the whole body and the speech. So that means a ditti, a wrong view, when one is harboring for long time, so it could be the governing factor how one being performed. So how he is acting based on the body, the speech and the mind, all are very much like governed by this particular view. So the way to abandon it, tang netammama nesohamasmi na meso attati eva metang yathabhutang sammappanya passato. So again and again one has to abandon those views, recognizing netammama, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Netammama, this is not mine. Neso aham asmi, this I am not. Nameso attati, this is not myself. So basically a kind of a disowning process, disclaiming process has to be employed to abandon all these different views. Now, as we discussed, so Buddha further elaborate on this subject. So he first abandoned the wrong view, focusing that the spending, absorbing in a particular samadhi is leading to effacement, leading to cutting off the defilements, is a wrong view. Actually, it's a beautiful, pleasant abiding, that's all. There is no kind of a relinquishment of the defilements when you are absorbed to the samadhi. Anyway, as we discussed using the Jhana Nissaya Sutta, there is a way that Buddha also mentioned how to relinquish or address these defilements using the samadhi. So that is actually one has to emerge from the samadhi. One has to come out of the samadhi and then has to relinquish the samadhi qualities, seeing them as impermanent, unsatisfactory and non-self. That means it's a kind of a way that one is looking at a samadhi, the qualities, the results of the samadhi, in a kind of fault-finding way, finding its defects, finding its disadvantages, how it can cause suffering, how these different subtle mental formations are now going through this impermanent suffering and non-self. And then actually we get on to the content of the sutta, that is where Buddha start discussing about the effacement, the Sallekha. Pare vihinsaka bhavissanti mayametta avihinsaka bhavissamati Salleko karaniyo. So others are cruel, others will be cruel, but we shall not be cruel. Effacement should be practiced. So basically here Buddha introduced 44 different, we can say, certain defilements, and he is now recommending the opposite of all that. So we discussed them, dividing them to three levels, three groups, talking about the 10 causes of wrong, and then Buddha is inviting us to abandon the wrong and establish ourselves in the right side. And again, the tenfold wrongness, Miccha Ditti, Miccha Sankappa, Miccha Vacha, so like that, that wrong views, wrong thoughts, wrong speech, etc. So instead of that, establish ourselves in the right side, right view, right speech, right livelihood, etc. And then there are 24 mental impurities, and overcoming them also is something that one has to start with. Anyway, it's a kind of a comparison that he again and again see how others are behaving. Others are not actually abiding by the proper side. Others will be overcome by sloth and torpor. But we shall be free from sloth and torpor. Effacement should be practiced thus. Others will be restless. We shall not be restless here. Others will be doubters. We shall go beyond doubt here. So likewise, again and again Buddha showing us how the majority of the people are behaving, but we as his followers, as his students in a way, has to take the opposite. So he recommends the proper side. He's there to direct us. So we admire, we appreciate his presence, his guidance, and so we are correcting ourselves. So this kind of a practical approach he is recommending. And then again, another stage is mentioned as the Chittuppada, inclination of the mind. We are, again and again, we are motivating the mind, directing the mind. So this is the path, this is the correct side. I should practice in this correct side. I should abandon this wrong side. So in a way, even at the mental level, one is determining again and again, kind of reflecting again and again, reinforcing the mind. Because within the mind that we get a lot of distracting thoughts or habitual tendencies, so they might invite us to do the wrong thing. But we again and again has to establish mindfulness, confirm the mind, direct the mind, telling this is the path, this is the correct side. So this Chittuppada. So and Buddha further enumerates it, telling that even the Chittuppada is something very, very useful, then no point of telling the benefits of the implementing them through the body and the speech, because that is so much beneficial. So if it is such a benefit to even incline one's mind towards the proper side, then how about implementing the proper side? So therefore he encourages us to be in the proper side. And now the working part, the avoidance. So basically, while we are continuing the life in daily activities, so there may be opportunities that we may encounter to go through some cruel activity. But now we need to work it around, and we have to put ourselves in the non-cruel side. There may be situations that we are tempted to kill, but we need to work it around, and we need to abstain from killing. There may be situations that we also get a chance or thought to steal, but that needs to be addressed, that needs to be properly worked out, and that need has to be abandoned, that wrong desire has to be abandoned, and we should refrain from taking what is not given. So likewise, now further he practically explains, so all these things are practical situations in our life. It is not only during the meditation that we are addressing the defilements, cutting off the defilements, but as a whole, during the whole life, we have to be fairly mindful. So that's why sada sato, that means continuously mindful. As much as possible, you are trying to be continuously mindful, vigilant, so that we can trace various defilements. So we don't know when will be the defilement available, but if we are mindful, we are able to quickly trace them. So there is no mercy coming from defilements. There are no excuses. So we need to understand that risk. So therefore, maintaining continuous mindfulness is the only refuge. So we take mindfulness as a protector, a guarding factor, a monitoring process. So if we have mindfulness, then it will indicate, okay, now the mind is going in the wrong direction. Now there is a potential of arising a type of defilement. Now the mind is going towards the lust. Now the mind is going towards the restlessness. Now the mind is going towards the anger. So likewise, a kind of a warning may happen through the mindfulness. So then we can work it around. So that avoidance part, what we call the parikkamana, pariyaya, is this working side. So now one is working on it. Not only in meditation, during the meditation we are refining our qualities, refining our skill, and that skill, once available, now we are applying it to the whole life. Now we do a kind of a cleansing process, a purification process. Now when the purification process takes place, now one recognizes, okay, now the mind is moving upward. So I am not taking wrong sides now. I am not into the bad habits now. To some extent, mind has become peaceful. And I may enjoy certain periods of undefiled mind, a fairly pure mind. Previously, I was tortured by various defilements, and not only the mind, it has caused certain psychosomatic diseases. But now, as a result of this practice, internally I feel calm, relaxed, peaceful, mind not being polluted often. So you may feel some sort of development internally because you are working around the proper path. You understood what is correct, what is wrong. You had an inclination in the mind, okay, I have to be in the correct side. And now you are working around it. And as a result of that, now you recognize some sort of a calming, relaxing, a peaceful state of mind. And you feel that, yes, now I am moving upward. I was very much into the other side, the wrong side. All those defiled states, defilements or unwholesome activities were taking me to the hell. But now I was able to take me out, put me into the correct side. Now the last part Buddha discuss here is the parinibbana pariyaya. So now further and further defilements are calm, relaxed, basically we can say weakened, and time to time probably maybe experiencing some deep states of peace, fairly tranquil states of peace. No stresses, no attachments, no burdens, no burning. Mind is resting, basically. So that state, we can say, fairly we are getting closer to Nibbana, a kind of an extinguishment, where defilements are very much like extinguished. They are the ones actually burning the mind. Now they are fire being extinguished. Now here actually Buddha give a very interesting simile. One who is himself sinking in the mud should pull out another who is sinking in the mud is impossible. that one who is not himself sinking in the mud should pull out another who is sinking in the mud is possible. Now this is a very interesting statement, because first of all we need to be confident about ourselves. So we being completely carried away by the defilements, being a victim of the defilements, completely trenched by the defilements and engulfed by the defilements, then thinking or trying to implement the taking someone else out of those defilements, out of that mud, is kind of an impractical thing. So our way of handling it, our way of advising him, on the other hand, the bad example we are giving, all that actually go to the wrong side. So other person also might get misled, or he might feel embarrassed about our activities because we are also not in the proper side, and he has no proper example coming from ourselves. But on the other hand, if we are to some extent at least already come out of the mud, we are experiencing some peaceful, calm state of mind time to time, and we are able to tame ourselves and discipline ourselves, and to some extent you feel some inner peace, and then probably we can be a good example, we can motivate others, we can inspire others, and we can ask others also to come to the proper path. Because we ourselves are practically enjoying that. So therefore Buddha emphasized, so vata chunda attana danto vinito parinibbuto parang damessati vinessati parinibba pesatiti thanametang vijjati. Therefore chunda, that one who is himself tamed, disciplined, and defilements extinguished, and should tame another. So we have to be a good example in a way. So I can remember actually Bhante Dhammajiva again and again emphasize how that Matara Sri Jnanarama Thero always emphasized that being an example. There may be opportunities for us to behave or kind of ill behave, but how one can be an example? Because sometimes people are taking things personally. So they take the personal examples. So actually Buddha did not recommend that. So he basically recommend that taking the Dhamma as the governing principle, or the Dhamma as our teacher. But it's sometimes anyway we take someone else as an example, as our inspiration. So therefore, we expect that person to be perfect. But time to time, probably that person not being an arahant or not being a Buddha, so he might make mistakes. So we also feel little depressed, little demotivated. So why our teacher, why my inspiration is behaving like this? So this is possible. So therefore, we have to be in a way little mature in this process. So taking a teacher, taking someone as an example is not a bad thing. But at the same time, we have to understand the Buddha's teaching, how he pointed out that the Dhamma needs to be the refuge, not a person to be a refuge. Actually, we can take the Buddha as a refuge because he is the perfected one. He is the perfectly enlightened one. And the foremost arahants like Sariputta Moggallana, so we can take them also as an example, and Buddha invited us to take them as an example. And also some very sublime, exemplified characters. For example, for the monks, Buddha say, okay, you better take Sariputta Moggallana as your examples. Okay, for the nuns, Kema Utpalavanna as the examples. For the lay dayakas, the devotees, female or the male devotees, okay, you take the Chitta Hattaka Alavaka as the example, or Chitta Grihapati as the example, householder Chitta as the example. And for the lay devotees, the female devotees, okay, you take the Kujuttara as an example, Velukantaki Nandamata as an example. Now these are very exemplified characters. These are really sublime characters. And even for the lay people, Buddha has kept their standard as a non-returner. Kujuttara, Velukantaki Nandamata, Chitta Gahapati, Hattakalavaka, all are non-returners. So therefore Buddha has given a really excellent examples. And on the other hand, he always invites us to look at the Dhamma, guided by the Dhamma, taking Dhamma as a refuge. Now anyway, as we are continuing the path, so we ourselves be a slowly an example to the others, inspiration to the others. So when we are stepping into the proper side, maybe our children are inspired by that. Our parents are inspired by that. Our neighbors are inspired by that. Our friends are inspired by that. Our followers are inspired by that. So likewise, we become slowly influential. May not be that one is purposely doing it, but others are seeing that quality. It may naturally happen. It is not that you are trying to enforce, but rather others may feel the good qualities. Others may naturally attract, others may naturally feel confident, naturally inspired. So that also can happen. So basically, being an example, if we go to a wrong side, if we take a wrong direction, then others also get demotivated. Others also basically sometimes take the wrong side because we have given a bad example. So therefore, as we continue the path, so if we are taking the Dhamma as an example, Buddha as an example, Arahanta as an example, and as I explained, these very excellent characters as an example is a good thing. And as we are continuing, probably we ourselves feel that I am also now feeling calm, relaxed, often that I am not getting into quarrels, even someone else blame, I can be patient. Even someone is trying to argument, I can still maintain my peace of the mind. So I am able to tame myself. I am not jumping into conclusions, I am not jumping into happiness either. I am maintaining kind of a peaceful, equanimous state. So that means a kind of a maturity is now growing. So we need to recognize whether I am moving in the correct direction. A certain amount of maturity is ripening. And therefore, recognizing that how one is quenching oneself, how one is calming down, how one is sort of stilling oneself. So that is actually something that we need to recognize and to appreciate and to, so basically, move forward. So this Parinibbana Pariyaya, so basically pointing out a person given to cruelty has non-cruelty by which to extinguish it. One given to killing living beings has abstention from killing living beings by which to extinguish it. Now these are all wrong habits, bad habits, unwholesome habits. Time to time can pop up in our mind. But the point is we slowly put it aside, slowly calm it down. Not allowing it to kindle, not allowing it to overwhelm the mind, suppress the mind, agitate the mind, again calm it down, again calm it down. So we may have to do it 1001 times because there may be opportunities still quite difficult to handle, difficult to maintain calmness. So these things are possible. Now say for example, I can remember one yogi was telling that when she is approaching her sister-in-law, she feels agitated. So she can't bear that meeting. So as she approaches the sister-in-law, due to some reason, her mind gets agitated. She feels kind of tensed and she feels a little angry, a certain resentment arising. So maybe there may be some past incidents which has caused that. It may be a couple of years ago a certain incident has happened, but now even once we approach her, still this agitation can happen in the mind. That is possible, because we are having that memory, some troublesome memory in our mind. So as we approach that particular person, again we feel agitated, again we feel a little tensed, again we feel unhappy, because we are bearing that past memory. But how about calming it down? How about forgiving? How about extinguishing that little fire burning in our mind? So this is something that we need to practically work it out. So we can't simply say, may she be well, may she be happy, may she attain Nibbana. So that is also possible, I mean, that is also necessary to do. But at the same time, practically, when we are with him, with her, so how about in case that agitation again happen, in case that burning again happen, how about calming it down? How about relinquishing that anger, relinquishing that bad thought? So all that is a very practical approach. Actually, we already discussed to some extent in the avoidance part, where Buddha discussed about how to avoid that bad thing, and instead we put ourselves in the correct side. So similarly here also, again and again putting to the correct side and again experiencing this calmness. Actually, we can see how this is somewhat resembled with the Indriya Bhavana Sutta. So in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta also Buddha saying the same thing. Now, try to establish yourself in the equanimity. So that means it's not a mere equanimous feeling. Rather, one has practiced a fair amount of vipassana. So as a result of that, one is able to experience the unattached mind, non-grasping mind, equanimous mind. And now you are consolidating that. So while being there, there may be a situation again the mind get agitated. So you may see something bad, you may see something disturbing. So as a result of that, again the mind can be little agitated. But now Buddha invites, olarikam sankatam patisamuppannam. You need to see that this agitated state is olarika. This is a kind of a gross state. It's a kind of a burden to be in this agitated state. Sankatam, and it is a conditioned state. And patisamuppannam, and it has causes, and there are causes making this conditioned state. So you look at that and come back or return back to that old, very quiet, equanimous, peaceful state. Etam santam, etam panitam, yadidam upekkha. So that equanimous state, non-grasping state, is the refuge. So similarly here also, this parinibbana pariyaya. So Buddha is pointing out that extinguishing part, again and again calming down, again and again making the mind peaceful. Now, when one is progressing, so you are putting yourself into this kind of unestablished position. It is not that you are putting yourself into the body. Now say for example, when anger arises, so maybe during our early stages of practice, we may be putting our attention to the body, because some anger is in the mind. We don't know how to handle the anger, so we put ourselves back to the body, maybe breathing several times of rising and falling of the abdomen. So that may help to calm down the anger, so the anger may be abandoned. True, that's also a good practice. And later, maybe you are able to directly overcome anger by looking at anger, seeing anger as a mere thought, mere emotion. How is it arising and how is it calming down, relaxing, fading away? So you are now directly confronting the anger. That's another stage. So you are able to do that. Probably at another level, we may be able to see that anger is arising, And slowly you put, keep it aside and calm him down and relaxing at the non-grasping state, anisita state, anupadana state, objectless state. But we can see that the equanimous, peaceful, non-grasping state, that's another level of practice. So this extinguishing part, this parinibbana pariyaya, that is where the emphasis is. So always again and again making the mind peaceful, no agitation, no any kind of burning. So when one is continuing like that, so we can see that the old habits are very much like discontinued, weakened. We are not strengthening them, we are not emphasizing them, strengthening them. Rather, old habits are slowly, slowly faded away. Now the mind naturally starts resting in the equanimity. Now the mind naturally starts sort of abide by that emptiness. Naturally the mind is empty. This emptiness is a kind of a refuge now. And you are keeping that emptiness as a reference to recognize even subtle defilements. That may be a kind of a signless state, that may be a kind of a desireless state, that can be a, maybe an emptiness state. Doesn't matter. All are kind of a reference for us to recognize subtle defilements. So we recognize it, work around and put it aside and again calm down. Another defilement, we recognize it, notice it. And we are able to abandon it, again come back to the peacefulness, calmness. So the majority of the time has to be this calmness, unagitated mind, relaxed mind, a peaceful mind. So if we are doing like this, then we can say further and further these defilements are weakening. So therefore, through the vipassana we are talking of different levels of abandoning defilements. In the tadanga pahana, that means till the kind of strength of the wisdom is available in the mind, so the defilements don't have any power to arise. But the issue is that when the wisdom is weakened, again the defilements may pop up. But as we continue the path, now there may be longer absence of defilements. And we might even understand mind is not at a very intellectually motivated state. It is simply maintaining kind of a relaxed, equanimous state, but still no defilements. So likewise, now the wisdom has taken care of fairly cutting off the defilements. So it may be completely cut off, what we call as the complete cutting off the defilements, or samuccheda pahana. So that is actually talking about the maggapala. So how to verify the maggapala? So that is another area actually we have to separately discuss. So how one can assure that one has attained maggapala? So that actually I think we discussed already in the Kosambi Sutta, and probably we'll take it at another time. So how Buddha is pointing out certain criteria for us to see ourselves, whether we are there. For example, he's pointing out in the Kosambi Sutta, I'll give a couple of criteria. One criteria he recommends is that the see whether your mind is completely free from obsessions. Now, if the mind hasn't attained anything sublime, so you often encounter certain obsessions, obsessive thoughts, prapancha, and you are unable to quickly abandon it. You being a victim to that prapancha for a long time. For several days, you are being victimized to that prapancha, to that obsession. But if one has attained, one criteria Buddha say to verify is that the whenever certain emotions are popping up, developing, you are able to recognize it and quickly abandon it, it may not lead to the level of obsession. So that what we call the different state of defilements, the anusaya level, pariyutthana level, and then the vitikkamana level. So you are able to trace them at the pariyutthana level. When it comes to the surface of the mind, so you are fully aware of it. So they can't torture you for a long time. And without your notice, they can't overwhelm the mind. So you are noticing them very quickly. So that is one criteria. So Buddha say, in case you are fairly mature in the path, so the obsessional defilements can't overwhelm you. You should be able to quickly recognize them and abandon them. So quickly come back to the peaceful state of mind. Another criteria is that the kind of an honesty. So in case you made a mistake, you are not trying to hide it. Rather, you quickly want to sort of express it, confess it, and quickly do the remedy. That's another very honest quality that being developed as a result of the practice. Another thing is that when the proper Dhamma being talked, discussed, preached, that you are fully paying full attention, and that enthusiasm, that very much like alignment with the Dhamma happens when the proper Dhamma being talked. And not only that, when you are well aligned, when you are further sort of motivated, that you feel that, you feel it to the heart, you feel it well connected, we are not away from the path, we are not away from the taught Dhamma, and you become well connected. So likewise, actually Buddha has given a very beautiful criteria in the Kosambi Sutta for us to verify whether we have truly arrived that, and are those sublime qualities are properly inculcated, cultivated in our mind. So therefore, these are something that we need to again and again reflect. It is not that someone else come and give a certificate, or someone else simply come and praise. So those could be more superficial, but we are the ones who thoroughly know who we are, where we are. And for that, actually, we can use that criteria. What is explained in the Kosambi Sutta would be a really interesting criteria for us to again and again reflect, whether are we able to pass that criteria. Time to time, I am putting that criteria on my mind and seeing whether I get the kind of positive answers, correct answers to this criteria. And then actually to come to the end of the sutta, so basically we can see how this kind of extinguishing being really admired, and sometimes the arahants have beautifully mentioned that in those Theragatha, I have put two examples here. So one is from Abhaya Therigatha, evam viharamanaya sabbo rago samuhato parilaho samuchinno siti bhutamhi nibbutati. Now she is telling, when meditating like this, all my lust is eradicated. The fever of passion is cut off. I am cooled and quenched. So this word is very beautiful. Siti bhutamhi nibbuta. So I have become very cooled, calm, relaxed, cooled, and then quenched, and I attain Nibbana. And then another one from the elder Vimala. Now the Vimala Therigatha, actually she is a courtesan before her ordination. And anyway, she is beautifully mentioning the Nibbana. Sabbe yoga samuchinna ye dibba ye cha manusa kepetva asava sabbe siti bhutami nibbutati. And she is mentioning sabbe yoga samuchinna, all the different bonds are cut off. Ye dibba ye cha manusa, not only the kind of tanglements, kind of bonds related to the human realm, even to the divine realm, all the defilements, all the bondages, all the attachments are cut off. And she has no idea to be a god, no idea to be a celestial person. There is no desire for that, even that is cut off. Kepetva asave sabbe, all the asavas, influxes are cast aside, fade away. Sitibhutam hinibhuta, and she has become cold and quenched. Now, after this whole explanation, now Buddha give a kind of a further advice. Itiko chunda desito maya salleka pariyayo, desito chittuppada pariyayo, desito parikkamana pariyayo, desito uparibhaga pariyayo, desito parinibbana pariyayo. So basically, Buddha summarizing, okay chunda, now I have mentioned the effacement, now I have taught it, and then incline the mind towards the proper side, I have taught it. Then the avoidance, the working around the defilements, I have taught it. The way leading upwards, I have taught it. And now the extinguishing, I have taught. What should be done for his disciples out of compassion by a teacher who seeks their welfare and has compassion for them, that I have done for you. So after giving a really inspiring teaching, often Buddha say this to the Sangha. So he basically emphasizes, encourages the monks. Yanko chunda sattara karaniyang savakanang hitesina anukampakena anukampang upadaya katang votang maya. So Buddha being a compassionate teacher, a sympathetic teacher, who is wishing the welfare of his disciples, has given the path. Now again he has mentioned the path, elaborated the path. Now he is motivating the monks to meditate. Etani chunda rukkamulani, etani sunyagarani, jhayata chunda, ma pama datta, ma pama, ma paccha vipatisarano ahuvatta, evanko chunda, evanko amhakang anusasaniti. There are these roots of trees, these empty huts. Meditate. Chunda, do not delay or else you will regret it later. This is our instruction to you. So this is what Buddha finally mentioned. And last, actually, I have made a little kind of diagram to summarize the whole thing. So we can use either Jhanic practice or the Satipatthana practice as a base to continue the path, and then knowing about the 44 defilements mentioned here, having some kind of an understanding, the Sammaditti about it, and then inclining our minds towards the correct side, Chittuppada. So I need to purify the mind, I need to abandon the impurities, and then the Parikkamana, this is the moving around and cutting off the defilements, working around it. Practically, you are doing the practice every day, 24/7. So very much like you are engaging in the practice. And then the uparibhaga pariyaya, that means now you feel that you are moving upward. And ultimately, you feel kind of quenching, a peaceful state. You have worked it around. There are now absence of defilements for a noticeable periods. You are not being burned by lust for a long time. You are not being burned by anger for a long time. So likewise, now the mind is quenching, calming down. So this is the kind of a little thing I have prepared and already explained this. So with that, I conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
I hope you can hear me.
Yes, yes.
Very good. Thank you for the teaching. I really enjoy. So with that, the diagram, of course, it was
I'll share the whole thing. Yeah, that's another thing. I'll share the diagram so that not only the diagram, the whole teaching, the PDF I'll share so that you all can read it further.
I appreciate it. I think Jennifer probably can email, I guess, or I can do that either way. The question that sort of came to me when you were talking about the sutra or the teaching today, how one can sort of evaluate themselves, where their status of mind, what Buddha have talked about in that sutra. So I think what I understood, if an agitated mind sort of you sort of come in an agitated mind, then you sort of go into the thinking about that for prolonging and comes with prapancha, I guess, you know, you think over days, and but that is not the case here. Now it has sort of come to a you know that it has changed the status of that tranquil mind, and how can I bring it back or to the neutrality. And if that sort of is that the sort of case that I understood?
No, actually,
where you have sort of come to a certain type of an understanding.
No, I didn't get to your question properly.
So the question was, I'm trying to clarify what you stated, and then I'm trying to sort of understand exactly. You said in the Buddha's teaching, you have the agitated mind, and mm-hmm. then you, if your mind sort of keep in that state for long,
uh-huh.
where it goes into the prapancha state.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know in that state it is. Am I to sort of hear that you still haven't reached to a destination where Buddha was talking about? Mm-hmm. And then the other state is the moment you realize your mind is agitated,
mm-hmm.
and now you don't go into the state of your prapancha, you think to yourself or you realize that your mind is agitated,
mm-hmm.
you bring it back.
Mm-hmm. Actually, so basically now we can go to a kind of an example. For example, now you all know that there's a beautiful incident happened during the Buddha's time, that Visakha. So she being a stream winner from her young age, now she is a woman with many children, and one of her grandchild passed away. And she was really fond of her and she really loving her, and she came to tears, and with tears and she went to meet the Buddha, and then Buddha had to preach the Dhamma for her to come to understanding. So it indicates certain amount of a direction is required for her, because for a short period she have shifted and she became emotional. So therefore, even a stream winner, we can't say that the person is completely perfected and never going to the proliferation. And only the arahants are completely free from proliferation. From prapancha, only the arahants are completely free. There may be instances that the sotapannas, for example, get into such states and then overwhelmed by that the emotion. But what the instant, the beauty is, that now they can quickly recover. They may not stay there for a long time, say days, brooding in it, pondering in it, burning in it, rather with either from someone's advice or they themselves are able to quickly overcome that. So that therefore it's still possible to go to a prapancha, but they can come out of it within a short period of time. So through the examples, that's what we can see as we examine the certain suttas. Examples happen during the Buddha's time.
Yes, so thank you. And I was kind of wondering, I think that example itself is a very good and a valid example, because, you know, especially when our loved ones sort of, depart from this, you know, and you see that there is some type of a change in your mindset.
Correct.
And then you always wonder. But so I think that example basically gives that clarity.
Correct, correct.
I think with that, I will stop with my questions. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Thiruvan Sannan.
Thiruvan Sannan.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I would invite Peter for the next question.
I have a question about contemplation of elements, but specifically about space.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally, for earth, water, fire, air.
Mm-hmm.
So when this question arose about space, I wasn't sure where that fitted in and how you do that in practice.
No, actually we are not taking it into the practice, but certain suttas are explain it. For example, in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha say the space element is where inside the mouth, inside the lungs, or inside the bowels, or the stomach, where the food is not available. So those are the empty areas where the space is most prominent. But the problem is to trace it, to recognize it, to practically experience it is very difficult. Therefore, in the elements meditation, we take only the prominent four elements. So the Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayo are more easy to understand, easy to recognize. So therefore, those are the ones actually we are using during the practical implementation of the elements meditation. And then the Vijnana Dhatu, the consciousness element, we can go through as the Vedana, Vedana Anupassana, Chitta Anupassana, Dhamma Anupassana. So there is no particular meditation is done towards the space element.
So the consciousness element, I suppose that's as part of the five aggregates.
Exactly. Actually, they are the consciousness element is a kind of umbrella term used to cover all the mental aspects. So it includes Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, all. Because you know that the six elements explained in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta covers the whole thing. Similarly, five khandas explained in many suttas covers the whole thing. So likewise, those are different ways of explanation. So when we are talking the consciousness element in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, that actually encompasses many areas. So maybe the feelings, maybe the perceptions, maybe the sankhara, the formations, or the consciousness element itself.
And in terms of external to the body, looking at space element, because I was just thinking, you know, when you look out at trees, there's the tree and then there's all this sort of space around it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a way of being aware of space?
That also possible. That also possible, definitely. So therefore, I mean, space element is in a way help us to declutter the mind. So when we are being distracted towards many objects, so we can slowly relinquish them and put ourselves into the space. So that's why, for example, say when you are practicing Anapanasati, now there may be a little space between in-breath and out-breath. And when you are experiencing Vedana, different feelings, there could be space between two feelings. Similarly, there are spaces between or among thoughts. So actually, we can't say they are exactly the space element. We can't deny that either, because typically the space is defined as the parichinna avakasha. So then, kind of, it is attributed more to the physical realm, where when the absence of other material, patavi apo tejo vayo, is there, then what is having is the space element.
Right. Okay. And the business of in Arupa Jhana, when there's talk of like akasha sort of understand, but I'm thinking that that's another place where this space kind of is mentioned.
Correct.
And I'm thinking, if it is Arupa Jhana, then there's no contemplation there, is there? Because that vichikicca, that's all stopped. So in that situation, space is just experienced. And that its reflections come afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So while you are in the Jhana, reflections are not possible because you are being absorbed. It is common to all the Jhana.
Right.
Yeah. So, but once come out of that, may be possible.
Okay, Bhante. I'm far from it, so I'll leave that there. Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah.
Any questions on your side?
No, our side is very silent today. Then, actually, Jennifer, this may be the last session for some time because I have to take a break because I am going overseas. I am visiting Australia for about 5 weeks, so therefore, the Sutta teaching session will not be conducted for about 5 weeks. That is something that you need to mention today. And so actually, the organizers may share the Zoom link if one is interested of joining the Dhamma sermon and the question and answer sessions conducted in Australia. So during those retreats, so you are invited to participate. And the I'll ask organizers to share the link with you, and then you can distribute among the others.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. Okay, then we'll finish the session then, and I invite Venerable Dhammosadha to conduct the sharing of merits.
Whatever merits we have gained today from sharing the Dhamma, discussing the Dhamma, we would wish to extend these merits to our relatives, to all the celestial beings. May our relatives rejoice in these merits. May all devas rejoice in these merits. And may all celestial beings protect the Dhamma the Dhamma exposition and the Buddha Sasana for a long time. May the seeds of Dhamma that we have received grow, producing path, fruition, and Nibbana. I invite everyone to join in the recitation of the traditional Pali verses for the sharing of merits. Ettavata chamyehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata chamyehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti sinniya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyang tam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyang tam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desanam. Akasatta cha bummatta devanaga mahiddhika Punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam Idango nyatinam hotu sutita hontu nyatayo Idango nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Idango nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo Satam samagamo hotu yavanibbana pattiya Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo Satam samagamo hotu yavanibbana pattiya Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo Satam samagamo hotu yavanibbana pattiya Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you,
Pante.
Thiruvan Sannai.
Thiruvan Sannai.
Good retreat. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thiruvan Sannai.